Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, this is Marcia. Good story is a good story. And Marcia Cook and my co-host is Elizabeth Black today. Elizabeth, hi Elizabeth.
Hi, I'm doing really well. How about you?
I'm good. I know you were sick for a while, but now you're...
Yeah, I'm finally over it. I've been sick for a week.
And you know what? So many people are sick. I'm going to just talk about a few things, so I'll just get this out of the way, because we have a really big show today with a lot of great people on the show today. It's going to be fun. And let's just see. Okay. We have... Today's Tuesday, and Friday is a show that Virginia and I are doing every other week on Friday, and what we're having is... it's a question and answer, and Bennett Pomeranz will be on with us, and it's going to be an hour show like we usually do, but it's also open to discussion, and we're probably going to talk about, one of the topics is, does it matter if the beginning and the end, if you have that when you're writing, which I've had so many writers on, we talk about some people know the ending, some people don't, and Virginia wanted to talk about that as well as other things, because... a lot of people ask these questions. If you know, I know the answer to that when I'm writing. It's sometimes it happens, and even if you have an ending, it doesn't always go that way. But we're going to talk about that on Friday and any other topics that we decide to talk about, because one never knows, especially when Virginia and I are there. And Sandra, I'm just going to say hi to you for 1 second. Hi, Sandra. Is Sandra on or off? Well, it could be. All right, this is live. We'll see how this goes. Okay.
And I'm here.
Saturday. Okay, good. And Saturday we have J.D. Holliday, who does a children's show with children's books. It's coming on our, you know, J.D. used to do the show with Virginia and I, and now she has a little show where people are reading children's books. And it's good for the kids. And when you hear the time, you'll know it's for kids because it's 8 a.m., and it's 10 a.m. actually in Eastern, 9 Central, and it's 8 Mountain and 7 Central. But it's just a half-hour show, and her and Christy were on the show last week, and we talked about it. And they have sometimes two people doing a show, but this week it's only going to be one, and it's a children's chapter book, and it should be a very interesting show. And okay, so now I'm going to just introduce Elizabeth, and she's going. We have a lot of guests. I think there's one that came on. Brian, is that you?
Or is that Brett?
I'm here. Oh, hi. Okay, we have everybody here except Brett, I think. Okay, so the people that are on the show today are all horror and dark, deep thriller, and they're really good writers. We have Joe Lansdale, Christopher Beck, Trent, and we have Brian Moreland here, and we have Elizabeth Black with us. So it's going to be a fun show, and we've had this before, and we really did have a great time on it. Brian's been on also a separate show. And, Brian, I don't know if you heard this before, but I was saying that the last time you were on the show, you were in, like, a dark, secluded place from everything. So that's all.
That's
now
right.
When I think of you, I think of where you are. Even if it's daytime now, I'm thinking, because that was really weird to be talking about all this horror when you're in the middle of darkness. Okay, I'm going to let Elizabeth introduce everybody. And hi, Elizabeth. It's yours now.
Hi. Well, we have a really wonderful group of guests today. We have Trent Selasny, Brent Millis, who I'm still waiting for him to come on the air, Christopher Beck, Joe Lansdale, and Brian Moreland. So I'll start with Trent. Trent's an absolutely wonderful writer. His fiction includes The Fractal Despondency, To Sleep Gently, A Crack in Melancholy Time, Destination Unknown, The Day the Leash Gave Way, and his latest story, Butterfly Potion. And our next guest is Christopher Beck, who's written a number of dark fiction stories, including Rex, Cadence of the Undead, Lonesome Night, Missing Child, With This Ring, I Bleed Dead, and he has a short story in the anthology Phobophobia. And, Brian Moreland, his books are Dead of Winter and Shadows in the Mist. and he's received some praise from writers such as Douglas Preston and James Rollins. His short stories include The Dealer of Needs and Chasing the Dragon. And last but not least, we have Joe Lansdale, who's known as a champion mojo storyteller. And his characters, Hap Collins and Leonard Pine, appear in books including Savage Season, Mucho Mojo, Bad Chili, and Rumble Tumble. His latest novel, which just came out, is Edge of Dark Water. And he's also done some short story collections. He's done some comic books, graphic novels, screenplays, chapbooks. He's very prolific, and he's very well known. Also, just won the Lifetime Achievement Award at the World Horror Convention. And you probably recognize him from Bubba Hotep and Incident on and Off a Mountain Road, which have been turned into screenplays. And that's a basic introduction to everybody so far.
Okay, I wanted to say one thing first before we get into this. Brian, you said Brian. Did you talk about Brian?
Yes, I covered Brian.
Brian, you did. Okay, you did that one. Okay, I couldn't hear it for a second. All right. Now, I wanted to say one thing. I know a lot of people always say, they go like, oh, I don't think, I'm not a horror writer. I'm not a dark thriller writer. I don't want to read those books. A lot of book reviewers don't want to read those books. Ridiculous. And the same that goes with, intense, romantic, erotica books. So on this show, we have a lot of different people on the show, and one of the reasons I have these shows is because everybody on the show is a writer, and we all have the same problems. It doesn't really matter what we write. And I think that other people, myself included, since I've been doing shows for the last 2 years, I've done like over 150 shows, and I've met great people. And each and every show that I have learned from everybody. So I think that this is the thing that people out there should really realize, that when you're a writer, it doesn't matter what you write, you have the same problems. So I think that people, instead of saying like, oh, I don't want to do this, or I don't want to read this book, I think you should try to give everybody a shot, because they're really good writers. And I think it's very good to switch genres. Even if you read a certain kind, it's also good to know about what other people are doing. And basically everybody on this show today is they're very good writers. And so instead of, just saying, oh, I don't, because I myself write screenplays, and I tried a horror screenplay, and it was great fun. It was a lot. It's very different than I ever did. And I think sometimes that's what I like to show on the show, that everybody is basically the same. We're all writers. And no matter what we write, we have the same problems. So also, I just want to say before we get into this, Fran Lewis, who's on our show, she does a book review. She has started a new Facebook page, which is called Reviewing Your Book. Okay, and now she has five writers. She has five other people also in there with her: Sheila Deef, Virginia Grenier, who is with me with World of Ink, Karen Vaughn, Delaney Oakes, and Martha Cheek. Now, and you can go on to Reviewing Your Books, and there's six writers altogether. So they will be able to review your books if you send it in. And there are people that will review every kind of book. So I think this is a really good thing now. And I think because everybody knows that listens to my show how I feel about the reviews, I think that you need a lot of reviews, but you need them from reviewers. And not people, sometimes you need reviews from your fans, but you need reviews from reviewers who are reading your genre. And so on this site, Reviewing Your Book, Fran just started it, and it's going to be a great thing because you can all send your books in, and there will be somebody that will read all genres. Okay, that's it now. I'm done here. All right. Now, Elizabeth, go ahead. You want to start out with what you want to talk about?
There are several things I wanted to talk about. As far as everybody's writing, I'd like to know if there's a book that you haven't written that you would like to write.
Well, I know there is one for me, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, is that Joe?
Yeah.
Is that Joe?
Yeah, that's Joe, yeah. Okay. I'm the one with the accent.
okay.
Yeah, no, there's one for me. There's a big Western novel I've been wanting to write for many, many years, and I've actually thought about it a lot and actually wrote two short stories related to it. But it's a big historical Western novel, and I hope to get to it eventually.
Oh, well, that's very interesting.
Looking at your resume, you definitely will, because you've done a lot of things.
I've actually written in the Western field before, but I haven't done this big one I've had in mind for so long.
So if you, when you write it, it would be your first historical?
No, no. I've written many historical, historical crime or whatever. I've written westerns as well.
Oh, yes. Well, I know about the westerns. I've read many of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I consider those historicals in a way.
Oh, okay. I understand.
Yeah, I wrote about 30 to 50.
Don't you think it's good? Don't you think it's good for people to try everything? You know, not everything, but, you know, to try different genres. A test, it's kind of like a test. You can do these things.
I love writing all kinds of things. I don't think of it like that, though. I just think that it's what I want to write. I don't necessarily go around hunting for a particular thing. I just say, you know, what interests me at the moment, and that's what I end up writing.
That's a great thing. That's a great way to look at it, I think. It's very good. So you're open to everything.
Trent and Christopher, what about you two? Is there a book that's been bouncing around in your head that you haven't written yet that's just dying to be put down on paper?
There's many, actually. I would love to try my hand, like Joe. Eventually, it's in the Western genre. I would like to do straight-up Western and maybe a mashup of Western and horror. But I would really love to be able to do take the time, sit down, study, and do like a time period piece like Robert McCammon's been doing with his Matthew Corbett series, because it's just so gritty and cool, and it's just, I just like it. And after watching The Raven the other day, and just the setting, you know, back in the time, you know, back then with the gas lights and all that stuff, it's just, this is a very interesting location. It's an interesting scenery, and the characters are interesting, and I'd love to do something like that.
That's great. Did you like The Raven?
Yeah, it was better than I thought it was going to be. It wasn't the greatest thing in the world, but it was good. It's worth a watch.
Yeah, it's worth a watch.
John Cusack is Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah, he's very good. It wasn't a masterpiece, but it was good.
John Cusack was good.
Yeah, I grew up in Baltimore, so Poe was a bit special for me. I'm definitely going to go see it.
Yeah, I want to see it too. Because I like John Cusack. He's very good. He's a really good actor, you know. And when I first started being an agent, almost every I think I heard him on Howard Stern, and I don't think he even knows how many people have scripts that they wanted him to be in. Because I used to have a lot of authors would say, get it to John Cusack, get it to John Cusack. And, you know, he's a really unique kind of guy because he does a lot of different genres well, you know, and, like, he can do the darkest.
He's not a horror about it either.
Yeah, he's great. He's really good. He's really a good actor. So, you know, I mean, he's from Chicago, and he always says that. And, you know, he really had a great interview with Howard Stern. And Howard Stern would say, he goes, like, I didn't think I'm going to like the movie, but I did. He did. So, you know, I mean, so I think people, see, that's one of the things. People, they just go, oh, no, I don't want to go see this because it's a dark movie. Or, you know, I mean, that's what needs to be changed, where people can kind of open up and say, you know what, maybe I should see this because he's a good actor, so it'll probably be good. You know, and like Joe just said, it was good. And that's what I think people expect too much sometimes when they go to a movie. If it's good, if it's entertaining, and that's what really a movie was meant to be, just entertaining. You know, and so I think this is a good thing. So I think I definitely will see it. And anybody else saw it that's on today? Did anybody else?
I'm planning on seeing it this coming week at some point, so.
Okay, that's a good thing. Okay, so I'll add that in. Go ahead. You want to say anything, Elizabeth?
Well,
you want, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I just haven't heard from Brian or Trent yet. I wanted to find out.
Yeah, I know.
Since you were just talking about the movies, I know that a couple of you have written screenplays, and at least Trent has one play out. So how was that experience different from writing a novel or from writing a short story?
Well, as far as writing a play goes, I know Joe's written plays as well. I've wanted to write plays forever. I guess that might be one of my things that, you know, projects you're dying to do. I've been wanting to write some full-length plays, and a couple months ago, a friend of mine in town contacted me, and he was looking to direct a short play, and he's read my books, and he said, would you be willing to try writing a short play? And I thought, oh, well, this is perfect because it'll be short, and it's a very small venue, so if I completely screw it up, you know, the whole world's not going to know. and so I wrote about a 15-20 minute play, and it was just performed Friday for the first time.
How did it go?
It went really well. I was
good.
Surprised that
great
that it went as well as it did. The actors were phenomenal, and the audience gasped at the right moments, and so I figured it was it went over well. And Wes Studi was there.
Were the actors' interpretation any different from what you had intended?
A little bit, but the lead actor, a man named Ezekiel Kreider, who played Grant Harrington, the main character, he actually did a better version of the character than I had in my head, and so that was that made it really exciting. It's like, wow, he's
yeah, that's it. That's very interesting, and that's nice that you said that. That's great that you said that about the actor.
Yeah, I was very impressed, and it was really cool to see something I'd written actually performed on stage, which that had never happened before. So it was exciting. But more plays is, I think, probably what I'd want to do, other than the books and novellas and stuff.
I like them too. I like plays. I've had a couple of one act done.
You enjoyed it, so you enjoyed it. I do screenplays. I've not really done a play. I mean, they're similar in some ways, but not really, because it's, the action.
No, they're pretty different, yeah. I've written about 17 screenplays and sold all of them, I think. Well, I sold 15 of them, but not one of them has ever been made except for the teleplays I wrote for Batman the Animated Series. Outside of that, the others have been sold. Ridley Scott bought one, and John Irvin, and a lot of different people. But strangely enough, as fate would have it, none of them have ever been performed, though, except for the animated stuff.
See, why do you think that is, though? I mean, that's one of the problems with, as a screenwriter myself, and, I think I probably should say what I do, because I always forget to do that. Okay, I am a screenwriter, and I've had option scripts, and I'm a writer, author, and an agent. I've been, a WGA agent, and, one of the problems that I see right now is, one of the things I'm doing to change it a little is I think after seeing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of screenplays, and when you send them to production companies, they just don't like them for whatever the reason. This isn't right, that isn't right. So I'm going to work on something, a project now that I wanted to do before. I've had people's books optioned, but I'm really going to work on these production companies to try to get some of these books to movies as far as they can get their own script writer then. They need to get these good stories out there, and then we can have some really good movies, and if the script will be written from the book. But this way they'll get what they want instead of saying, like, oh, we don't want this, we don't want
It doesn't, it doesn't work that easy, though. Like I said, I've sold about 15 of them, and I've had them them when I did them. And I've had options and all sorts of things. Like I said, the one I sold to Ridley Scott was the best thing ever until they found it was too dark to get anybody to act, and then suddenly it wasn't the best thing ever. That's the way it works. I sold one in France that they never made, paid me a lot of money and never did a thing with it. And sometimes there's no rhyme or reason. It has to do with things change. They can't get the actor they want. They're all excited about it then, but then they see something shiny. It's that kind of thing.
Before I became a writer, I used to work behind the scenes doing I was a gaffer and a makeup artist. I did prosthetics, and I also did a scenic art. So, yeah, I've seen the way that the stage plays run from behind the scenes, and it is completely different from writing a novel or a short story.
Yeah.
But the whole process is fascinating.
So I liked writing stage plays. I did a couple of them, and they were both performed, and I enjoyed seeing them, one in New York and one in a couple of other places. And so it is different, and I just produced a movie where the screenplay was written by my son, so that's a totally different approach to it. So, you have all kinds of stuff, and Bill Paxton and I are working on another one, but we have a screenplay by someone else that we both like, Brent Hanley, who did Frailty. And, I have the drive-in. I'm trying to do that one. Greg Nicotero, who's a special effects artist for The Walking Dead and a lot of other things, and directed one of those episodes. But we have a script by someone other than me because I'm co-producing. So sometimes it works where you have someone else do the script even though you're involved. It's your property.
Right, exactly.
I would love to see the drive-in as a movie.
So would I.
Now, I know Brian – I know Brian Moreland, you're interested in that. I know that you liked it from the screenplay point of it, having some of these books turned into screenplays. We've talked about that.
Yes, that's true. I studied screenwriting in college, and I even wrote some screenplays in college. And as I talked to some professional screenwriters who were actually selling some screenplays, I discovered how hard it is to actually get your work to ever reach public. Just as Joe said, he sold 15, and still hasn't, none of them have seen a big screen yet. And so that's why I decided to focus my efforts more on novel writing, because with novel writing, I could get it to the public faster and basically let people see the movie in their head.
I like it better, too.
Yeah. I find novel writing to be more liberating. There's no, you don't have to stay to the 110, 120 pages structure of a screenplay.
Yeah. I think a screenplay is a craft, not an art. I really do. I know that offends some people. But I find screenplays relatively easy to write. And the reason I think it's a craft is because no matter how artistic it is, you're designing it to hand to different people to screw up. That's pretty much what it is. And if they don't screw it up, it's all an accident.
Right. And the truth is, no matter, I could think something is wonderful, and then all of a sudden they'll go like, they don't want it. And, a lot of people think that, if this production company did a movie like, let's say, Hunger Games, then they'll say like they want it. But they may never want to do another movie like that again. And so I think that that's what people realize, is that they want you to send it to them because they think they'll make it. And that's not true. They may have wanted to try that, and maybe they'll just do something else next time. I don't think there's an answer. I think people want the answer, but after all these years of doing this, there isn't one.
Well, William Goldman had the best. He said, no one knows anything.
I was just going to say, the thing is, nobody knows.
Right. That's what I was saying.
People say, where's my Twilight?
People want them.
Yeah.
Everybody wants an answer to a question that doesn't – it can't be. Because, there's so many different people out there that like different things. And, and when it goes – you're right. When it goes through the hands of a studio, by the time it gets anywhere, it's like already, forget it. We don't want to do that anymore. And that's really a shame. But, that's
– and it's got nothing to do with logic. It a lot of times – sometimes it does. But a lot of times you'll have somebody say, you know what, I've got this certain actor in mind, and I want you to change this, so you change that, and when you move that brick, it causes something else to change, and then pretty soon you have what could have been a good screenplay turn into a crappy one.
Right.
I know.
And I've seen that happen on stage with even community theater. It'll happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and I just think, though, I know this is hard, what I'm going to really try to do, but because I like to try different things. And I really think, though, after all these years of doing this, I think this might be something they should really think about, because when they get all these screenplays, they hate them. I mean, they just do. And like you're saying, even if they buy them, they don't put them out. And,
Well, sometimes they
ridiculous.
Love them, though, but, it's just the littlest things change on them, because I've had it change because the somebody else bought the company or somebody else moved.
Yeah.
Mucho Mojo, Ted Talley, who did Silence of the Lambs, did the screenplay. They had Don Cheadle, Josh Lucas signed up. They had David Goyer as a direct. They had everything was set and it optioned for twice, two years in a row, and then they just dropped it. And they dropped it because of just money considerations. But they had already spent a tremendous amount of money on it, but yet they wouldn't make that extra jump.
Right.
Isn't Savage Season supposed to be made into a movie?
I wrote the screenplay. It's been optioned, and it was supposed to be made into a movie. Then the last thing I heard, they were trying to make a television series out of it, and that's the last thing I heard.
Yep.
And the option runs out soon.
It's amazing how things get actually finished, if they actually finish a project, because of what happens. And, even in my screenplays now, sometimes I don't even write what color hair they have anymore, because if somebody that's a brunette is reading it and it says blonde, they go, I don't think this role is for me, so I don't write that anymore. You could say long hair, but, because it really, all these little things that don't mean a whole hell of a lot, they think, you can just change the color of the hair. And so many things could be changed easily with a script, no doubt, but it doesn't make sense because it doesn't work for them, and it could. I think a lot of these movies really, like you're saying, they're out there, but they never get made.
That's why I've gotten into producing and co-producing. Trying to get them made. And like I said, I got this one made. It's a small, independent, low-budget film, but it's kind of a step, I hope, in the right direction.
It is a great step because getting a small, people don't realize how hard that is. I mean, I opened Michigan Avenue Media. That was is my one of my companies. I opened that to produce movies, and that was like a, before everything got really bad and money got tight. And because I had an, somebody had optioned my script, I said, okay, I'm going to try to go out and get money. Well, everything went bad, and I can't. I mean, there's just no way. It's so hard to get money, and certainly if you're just starting a company, and I had it was optioned, and I had a director, everything would have been fine. But it really, I decided not to do it because it's just you need so much money and you can't ask. If you're just starting out especially, it could be very difficult. And I had the right people that could have done this, but I just, I got myself, I said, I just better not do this right now. And I'm hopeful someday. And like you're saying, people don't realize how it's so hard to get a movie made, a small, even if you're not spending a lot, it's tough. It's really hard. It's a great accomplishment to do what you did then. I mean, it really is.
Yeah, well, I may try to do it again if I'm crazy enough.
Well, that's right. We all are. Right? I don't
know.
I have a question
for everybody.
Yeah, I prefer short stories.
Well, I have a question for everybody. Since we're talking about movies, and we've already mentioned The Raven, and, well, I mentioned that I grew up in Baltimore, and Poe was a great influence on me, and I know that he was a great influence on a lot of writers. Plus, right now, I live on the northeastern coast of Massachusetts, smack in the middle of H.P. Lovecraft's country. And I was just wondering to hear from everybody on the, you know, on the panel, or whatever you want to call it, the show, who are your literary influences? You know, who were the people that influenced you the most to become a writer?
Nobody's answering that.
Well, I got an answer. I just didn't want to jump in. Let somebody else go.
I'll go.
Christopher, we haven't heard from you yet.
It's a combination of a whole bunch of people and a whole... But, you know, you think about some of my favorites who comes to mind, who I love and have loved to read the most, especially in the horror field, are people like Richard Layman and Bentley Little and Robert McCammon. You know, Robert McCammon, I stumbled upon him just breezing through the bookstore one day years and years and years ago. And I'm glad I did because he's one of the top. And I think he's a little bit underrated and more people should read him. But that's where a lot of my influences come from. And of course, you have the big guys like King and Koontz and stuff. But then you also have little guys that, you know, do little things. F. Paul Wilson and people like that who do a lot of the shorts that inspire me and stuff. So... comes from everywhere.
Brian,
how about you, Brian?
Yeah, I've studied probably 20, 30 authors just to see all their different styles and also what type of horror do they write. Do they write zombie books or do they write serial killers or cannibals? And I think my biggest influences are probably Dean Koontz, Robert McCammon, Richard Layman. I really got into horror reading back in the late 80s and early 90s. So that's when McCammon books were going strong. And of course, Stephen King. I read some British horror, like James Herbert, Clive Barker, were big influences. And then the classics, H.P. Lovecraft was also a big influence.
Joe?
Oh, so many. Not particularly just horror writers. Poe, for example, Matheson, Bradbury, Charles Beaumont, but, you know, Flannery O'Connor, Carson McCullough, Ernest Hemingway, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Steinbeck, all of those writers, Robert Bloch, and like Mark Twain, Jack London, I don't know if I said that or not, Rudyard Kipling, Robert Louis Stevenson. I mean, my list is tremendous, plus being influenced by film and comics and so many music, so many other different things. And there's always somebody new to discover, even to some extent. John O'Hara has been some influence. Just one after, Philip Jose Farmer is one of my favorite writers of science fiction, and he's been an influence. I like some of the Jack Kerouac stuff, and just a wide variety.
Yeah. Elizabeth, what about you?
Yeah, well, actually, I didn't mention that I also have written some horror stories, mainly an erotic romance writer.
You didn't say what you do either. Go ahead.
Yeah, I do both. But, I mean, I have my story, The Oily, just appeared in Stupefying Stories in the November 2012 issue. And I have a story coming out in Trent's anthology, A Splintered Mirage. It's called Shattering the Meat Tunnel. And my influences are kind of all over the map, too. I mean, well, I grew up in Baltimore, so Poe is a huge, major influence. And later I learned about H.P. Lovecraft. But I grew up with a lot of stage work. So most of my influences come from people like Oscar Wilde, George Bernard Shaw, Tennessee Williams, and then some of the lighter comedies, like or the satire especially, like Dorothy Parker. I mean, she's one of my favorite writers. And of course, Shirley Jackson was a huge influence on me because I saw The Haunting when I was 10 years old, and it scared me half to death. And of course, I had to see it again.
Great movie.
Oh, wonderful movie. The book is absolutely fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the older movies, you know, because I'm like a movie addict. I really love movies. I just love them. And, you know, some of the old movies, you know, are so good that you almost forget how movies were made. I mean, because you see some of these movies and you go like, oh, my God, those movies aren't even made anymore. I mean, they really, you know, it's a small, it's not a huge story, but it's so, the acting is good. Everything is good about it, you know, and all the dialogue and the actors.
Oh, yeah. I just saw Night of the Hunter and the way it's staged and the way that I've seen it before many times. It's one of my favorite novels, and it's also a great film, Charles Laughton's only film.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's
a fantastic movie.
And I keep going like, oh, I don't know. Every movie I see, I go like, oh, you know what? I don't even believe we see movies like this anymore because we don't, you know. And then because, you know, you really don't see some of the great movies. I mean, we have movies that make a lot of money at the box office, but that doesn't mean they're great. They just make money. And that's what's happened now. It's the name of the game, which is not really what people – we need to see some really good, good movies. I'm waiting for that, some good ones. And occasionally we have
There's some good ones made. You know, there's like the remake of True Grit was so close to the novel. Very well done.
Yeah.
Beautifully filmed. You know, there was Little Miss Sunshine, which was absolutely terrific.
Yeah, that was
you know,
really,
there are a lot of them made. There really are. And, you know, in the old times, if you watch on television or stuff like that, you're seeing usually the better stuff because there was plenty of junk made then, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So certainly the studios, when they were on contract, they just put them out there, right?
Right.
You know, they just, you know, they had
Yeah, it was a factory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was pretty much a factory.
Now we have the books. Books are like a factory now. We should talk about this, of what's going on. I mean, how does everybody feel about everything? I mean, Smashwords is mad with, you know, Amazon. And, you know, everybody out there is, you know, worrying about not as much as, like, the content and is as far as, like, if they're going to get a lot of good reviews and if people, I mean, they're trying to turn the tide. And I don't know that works as well.
But, you know,
trying to write good stories.
Yeah, but I disagree with you to some extent. I think it's always been a factory, and there's always been just some of the cream that rose to the top. If you go back to the dime novels, you know, of the early, the late 1800s, early 1900s, and then you had the pulps, that's what they were. They were factories. And then when you talk about the old first paperbacks, that's what they were.
Yeah,
they were factories. They had series after another, one after another, up until the 70s. Now they're trying to do factories where they do just, you know, bestsellers and eliminate the mid-list, and then that seems to be moving to e-books. But I think that's always been a factory, and I think that's the Americanization, and I think that the good stuff is far and between, and it always has been. And that it rises to the top. And then a lot of times, some of the crap is some of the stuff when you're younger that influences you, that gets you going, that gets your blood stirred because you don't know any better in a way because you haven't read that much. And the e-books are like the new paperbacks. Okay. They're like the new pulps. And it makes it hard in some ways for writing, but yet it also opens up a lot of new doors.
I'm
discovering a lot of writers in e-books that I never would have found under normal circumstances.
It's like the American Idol type. It's right. It's because it's like it's writers now that never would have gotten a chance. And I really think that's what's good about this. That's one of the reasons, like a lot of the writers with smaller publishing companies now, that's one of the reasons I'm just going to try this. I'll see how it works because I really believe it can work. So, but I believe a lot of things can work. So I just
Yeah,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I just looked at it. They had all these series, these Western series, these adult Western series, these crime series, and all, and they were just churned out. Some of them like once a month, and so you know it's always been there.
Yeah, you're right.
And a lot of people
right.
are completely
you know,
cutting out the middleman and self-publishing.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people are completely cutting out the middleman and self-publishing. And, I mean, some of the stuff never should see the light of day. But, you know,
right.
quite a bit of it is actually very good. And it's an easier way to keep control of your own product and to keep as much of the money coming back to you as possible. And I think we're going to be seeing a lot more really good works out there because of the way e-books are working out.
Right, and I just think that people, you know, my goal has always been, you know, whether they get published or not, just to keep writing. I mean, that's always my message because, you know, I mean, I know with myself, sometimes the things I've written in the past were not that great. And I look at it, I go, no, they weren't that good. So, you know, but then you get better, hopefully, if you continue, but a lot of people don't continue on. So I just feel like people should just kind of just keep going, and if they really love it, they should just keep doing it because it's important that we get a lot of different work out there. And with the e-books, there are so many good ones out there. And these people, you're right, they're getting a great shot out there. And they never, ever would have had a chance like this ever, you know.
Well, how does everybody feel about self-publishing in the whole?
The self-publishing thing, I think, is one of those deals that one of the things I love about publishers in New York is that at least you have somebody that tells you something stinks. Or that something's
right.
good. And it doesn't mean they're always right. But you ought to see the
right.
stuff they reject. That's the stuff that usually ends up self-published. That doesn't
right.
mean, however, that there aren't good self-published books or that people shouldn't do it. I think it works best for writers who are already established. In fact, I think that the e-books and the self-publishing may be really, really strong for people who already have a following because they can start eliminating the publisher, the agent, the editor, and all that. Although I really believe editors are very valuable, especially, you know, I know that selling is one of the things they rescue me from all the time.
That's the number one thing that's important. You know, I believe in self-publishing for people. I really do. But I do believe that editing is the number one. I don't care what kind of book you have to have that book edited. I mean, that's number one. Then you have a shot at it. If you put your book out yourself and you don't edit it, you don't have a shot because eventually they'll realize that you don't, you know, because everybody needs editing.
Well, when you're talking about people self-publishing and some of the books that they have out really desperately need an editor or they're so bad they really shouldn't be published, I mean, I look back on some of my writing and wish at least a couple of books I had changed or hadn't had published by a small publisher because I really wasn't ready yet. But as far as the rest of you, are there any works that you wish you could change or if maybe your earlier works you wish that you hadn't written
everything
at all?
Everything I write, I want to change it eventually, but you know
me
I
too.
Don't.
Me too.
I mean,
know
I'm just correcting mistakes. You know, it is what it is, but I'm never happy with anything I do totally.
Right.
I don't think any of
the same boat.
Shouldn't be.
Yeah.
But, you know,
yeah,
I wouldn't change anything. Like, I started
when
last...
When you're writing... Yeah, go ahead.
I wouldn't change anything. Like, I started January, like, 2011. A little help from another author about the self-publishing. I did it, and I tried it. And, you know, I did it sloppy. I did it poorly. I didn't have editors. I was an experiment. You know what I mean? I was trying to find my way into the business. And I'm not sad that I did it because it's gotten me into, you know, the graces and books put out by great small presses like Dark Continents and May December and Black Hound and other ones coming up. You know what I mean? So I can't complain. It opened up the door for me. But as far as seeing any more self-published works for me, that probably won't happen anytime soon because I'll probably try to go the more traditional route.
Yeah, I think that there's, you know, we all have, like, you know, feelings about how we did everything, and though, you know, and the truth is, like, sometimes when I write something and then I have to rewrite it, I change it, and then you really, you know, sometimes when they say they like it and they want you to change a few things, I had an issue where I did change it too much because I just thought it should be a different way, and that's really, sometimes when they ask you to rewrite something, they don't mean change the whole thing, but for me, I ended up changing the whole thing and the ending because I just thought it should be a different way, and what you're saying, Joe, is right, because sometimes you write something and then you read it again, you go like, oh, you know what?
Well, especially if I have a 40-year career, so from 1973, next year will be 40 years, so from 1973,
wow.
I've got more to look back upon. I have more lack of experience to look back upon and the gaining of experience. But even when something's pretty good and I'm proud of it, like – The Edge of Dark Water, the ones out now, get tremendous reviews and stuff. But I always think, I could have done that a little better. Not so much as I would have, say, looking it back on really old stuff. But, you know, I don't regret any of it either. I mean, because that's how I learned. That's how I became the writer I am. I remember Dean Koontz rewrote all of his early novels, which I thought was a terrible idea, because the earlier ones were they were him then, and they were very entertaining books. And I know Rick McCammon, he took out several of his, I think, out of print because they were early books, and you know they weren't his greatest work, but they were entertaining and they were early books. A lot of people enjoyed them, but I think that you know you are who you are if you're reading it, and I find that. You know, I back then I might have said he expounded. I'm going to take that out and put said. If I misspelled something, I'm going to correct that. If I wrote a sentence and it doesn't make sense and it got slipped through, I might correct that. But I'm not going to redo the novel page by page or structure by structure. Yeah. And in fact, I'll even live with a lot of the mistakes, because that's how you become who you are. And that's and you know, some things you decide not to ever allow back into print, and then other things the you know, people, if they love them and they keep wanting them, then I keep printing them.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes it's kind of neat to go back and see where somebody started and then follow them and grow with, see how they've grown over the years.
Right. I love those books where they'll have the early works of, say, Richard Matheson or Ray Bradbury and maybe show how some things have changed or things of that nature. I love that kind of stuff. I think those are writerly books. I don't know that the general public cares much for them, but I think that's why libraries like to collect manuscripts and your early works and things like that, or the ones which show where you marked out. They like to see how those things developed, and I know that I do as well.
When you did a book, Joe, The Good, the Bad, and the Indifferent.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Which
and
was
that's exactly
early
it.
Works.
Yeah,
and
it was early works.
In the introduction, you saying, you know, is this my best work? Something, I'm obviously paraphrasing, you know, is this my best work? No, but I put this out to show you that everybody starts somewhere.
Right, and that's it. And, you know, I love writers. And I'm not saying I know anything more about writing than anybody else, but I have had a long career, and I've survived and well enough that I think that I can say, look, you know what, everybody starts somewhere. Nobody starts out at the top of their form, or rarely do, and especially if you start young. I mean, I was 21, and I'm 60 now, so I've been doing this a while. And the thing is that it's a good way to say, oh, okay. And in that book, too, I wrote introductions about what I remembered about the writing of those works and about the autobiographical aspects that were going on at the time. I think I did two volumes like that. And I like those things from other writers, you know, a lot of people wanted me to do that. They kept asking me about those old stories. And though they were done in a limited manner, I'm glad I did it. I really am.
I think that's a good way to look at it, because, you know, I think that is why you succeeded in the market for all these years, because you kept going. And, you know, at the beginning, you know, you may look back, but then you also, sometimes, you know, when you look back, it's not a bad thing to look back and then say, you know what, that was then, this is now. And so I think you have all those years that really are, you know, showing a lot of us that you just keep going, because, you know, sometimes you write something you don't like and sometimes you write something you do like. And, you know, we're very, I think a lot of us are very hard on ourselves.
Well, you know,
and
in the 70s, I wrote nonfiction, and I wrote some early fiction, a crime fiction, and then in the 80s, like people like me and Richard Layman and Robert McCammon, are all, you know, all people, friends of mine, and we all were starting out at that time, and we were all excited and working off pure energy more than a vast well of experience. And so, you know, you get better. There are people that say, oh, I like the early stuff because of this, but I actually think I'm a far better writer now than I was then, which is not to diss the old stuff that I think's good. It just means that I think I've got more depth of character and dialogue. And I think those are things that, as there's some writers, when they wrote their early stuff, I'd go, oh, I like their early stuff. I don't like their older stuff. But when I got older and I read the older stuff, I liked the older stuff because I, too, was older.
You change a lot,
and I think that's not a bad thing. Well, I'm curious, what works does everybody have coming out in the near future, since we've been talking about, you know, what we've written in the past?
Brian, what about you? What's going on?
Well, I've got my novel Shadows in the Mist, which was my original novel published back in 2006, is re-releasing through a new publisher in September. And that's a book that I actually got to go back and do a little rework on. I've gotten some reviews on it, and they were all positive reviews, except for some reviewers said that the beginning was too slow. The setup, I took too long in the setup. And I got to read those reviews over the course of the original publication, and I reread the book, and I was like, you know, if I had a chance to go back, I would tighten that up. I would make it, you know, shorten the setup and get to the good stuff much faster. And then when this new book, which is coming out in September, when I got a chance to submit it to a new editor, and he was like, do you want to make any changes? And well, I went in and I cut at least two or three chapters at the beginning that I realized were just extra chapters that really didn't forward the story along. I kind of went off on a tangent on a side character, and I even ended up eliminating a minor character that didn't need to be in the book. And so for me, I'm pretty excited to actually share the new version, which I think is going to be better than the first.
Well, when will that be out? When will that be out?
September 4th. Yeah, September 4th of this year.
Great. I hope you'll come on and we'll debut your book. Good thing. You have a lot of loyal fans, though. You have fans that are very loyal to you.
Yeah, so far so good.
That's a good thing. You know, I think that, you know, a lot of writers have been on here. You know, it is good to have a fan base because, you know, what I was saying before, yes, we like reviewers, but we also like fans to say, like, you know, what they think, because we're actually writing so they, you know, we keep writing so they like our work, you know. I mean, this is a good thing, you know.
That's right.
So I think that, yeah, getting a fan base is important. If you, you know, I myself, with my career, I didn't stay in the right, I'm in different genres, so I myself have to make different moves. And because once I went into screenplays, I never did books again, and then I put them out afterwards. But I think that sometimes it's good to stay in somewhat of a genre, because then your fans really respect you and they want, and you hear feedback, and sometimes that really helps a lot,
mm-hmm.
you know, what they say. You know, because, you know, it comes from their heart. They're reading you, you know. So I think, all right, now, I think somebody was on, but Brett, he never came.
I don't think he ever made it on.
Grant, what you got coming out, man?
Me? I've got, I've got a few things coming out this year. In June, my novella Butterfly Potion will be coming out from Nightscape Press. I'm pretty proud of that one, but I'm sure in another month or two, I'll look at it and want to change things. My first anthology, A Splintered Mirage, is, I think, going to be out in August. And then I've got a novel, which Joe actually would have no idea that he inspired it from a very random moment, called Too Late to Call Texas. That'll be out in September.
That's a good thing. I think Joe would like, do you like to hear that, Joe?
Absolutely.
A good thing.
I love
that's
Trent.
Great.
I think he's a great writer. And he's a good. He's a friend of mine. So
that's a good thing that somebody can get to be inspired.
I'm hoping I'm going to see you this week, Trent. I'm a little bit confused on that, so maybe we'll talk about that at some point.
I was actually going to see if I could maybe give you a call after the show.
Yeah, you can
find out what's going on. Okay, great. Too Late to Call Texas. Actually, I'd like to just mention also, it was from, of course, like I mentioned, Joe, and it was from reading a lot of Cormac McCarthy and Soren Kierkegaard, and I guess you could call it historical. Sort of my first attempt, but it takes place in the 1970s, which was an interesting time, you know, and very
like
different research
now?
From anything
Uh-oh.
I'd done
is that
before.
Is that historical?
Yeah, that's scary.
Now?
And I thought of the 70s as a dull time.
I'm thinking I was alive then, but I...
Yeah,
you know,
I was born in the 50s, son.
Yeah.
That's spooky.
Well, that's why I'm wondering if it actually is historical. I mean, or is, you know, at some point when someone's saying, you know, I grew up, really, I was a teenager in the 90s, and
Yeah.
So I'm waiting for when people say, you know, this historical piece that takes place in 1993.
It'll happen. It'll happen, buddy. It'll happen.
Yep.
I got acceptance the other day. I'm going to be in another phobia anthology. Because I was in the phobophobia anthology with all those great writers put out by Dark Continents, I didn't want to cover any of the phobias that anybody in that book did. So I set out to do something different. I set out to do something a little off the wall. So I did a phobia about a guy, or I did a story about a guy who has fear of losing an erection. And that was accepted. I didn't get a contract for that. I just did the edits for that. Actually, when I get off the phone with you folks, I'm going to speak with another editor about another piece that's kind of more personal, borderline based on a true story. And I have a novella sitting at a publisher now, waiting to hear back from them. I'm working on another one. And I have, like, I don't know, 7 or 8 other stories out there that I'm just waiting for the yays or nays on.
Excellent.
Well, you've actually hit a topic that I have never, I can't answer on it. I can't talk
about
it.
You know, the real horror story is the inability to lose an erection.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just watch the commercials about that.
Yeah. 4-hour erection. Oh, no.
It's on prime time. Everything's on prime time now.
So what I like to do is when it comes with situations like that, especially after already being in one anthology with phobias, I like to go for the most off the wall, the most indirect approach. I like to pick the topic that most people are just going to be like, what? Are you serious? And then when I write it and then it gets picked up, I'm like, hey, that's pretty smart, wasn't I? I can
that's
do it.
That's a good way to look at it. That's a new theory. That's a good way to look at this. Well, it's kind of like this show. We kind of like talk about anything and everything, you know, and it's like, you know, because I think this is the, you know, when you watch TV or you watch, you know, I mean, everything goes now. This is a whole different market that I think that, you know, people have not seen before, because there are things on that you're watching and you go like, oh, my God, I've never seen this before, and it's on. So I think that there are a lot of areas now that anything goes. It's open pretty much to whatever these days.
And the most horrific thing is the commercials.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and we don't really know what all this effect is going to be on kids, because you know as well as I do that kids, you know, their parents are controlling what they watch. However, they go to their friends' houses, so then their parents can't control everything. And there are a lot of stuff there's a lot of stuff out there that you wonder how it got out there, but it is out there now. So we have to.
Yep.
You know,
no, a lot of us when we were kids started out watching just about everything. As far as I can tell, we turned out fine.
Yeah, I'm not a big believer that it makes a big difference. I mean, I think if somebody strapped you in a chair and made you watch nothing but, you know, horror films and things of that nature would be. Right. I think if you have an obsession, it's like when they blame movies for something that people do. They forget that millions of us have seen those same movies or read those same books, and we didn't commit crime.
Exactly.
So you could also make the argument that obviously. Films, by statistics of horror films and books, keep people from killing people. I mean, it's the same kind of stupid idea that if you have millions who saw them and didn't commit crimes, then why is it the two that did see it commit crimes? You know, it's like heavy metal music. My God, they've gone crazy. It's that damn rap music. You know, if they hadn't heard that, they wouldn't have killed everybody. But, and then there's thousands and millions of people hearing it. I mean, I've wanted to kill some people hearing it, but it's just terrible music to me. I'm sorry, I'm of another generation. But the thing is that the idea that does it, if you use statistics, it actually proves it doesn't do it, which is, of course, just as stupid.
Well, I've always said the comedies certainly don't make people funnier.
Yeah, and romance novels certainly don't make people more romantic.
Right.
Oh, believe me, they don't. I know about romance novels.
That's a punch right there.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, I think that one of the things, you know, with kids, you know, they, listen, kids on the schoolyard, whatever, they swear. And I think a lot of times when they see books that have swearing, I mean, like, kids know these words. I mean, this is, like, not a secret.
Well, yeah,
you
young
know,
adult novels have changed. I mean, I write young adult novels, and, you know, I started out with a person being hung in the first of it. And I wasn't necessarily breaking any ground there. I mean, you have books now that talk about gay relations and gay sex, which they should, because this is
the same, and
I think that the world is changing for, and whether people like it or don't like it, it changes, but it doesn't mean that, you know, ethics and personal morality has to change. Even people like me who are atheists have ethics.
But
right.
I think that that's what I was saying about the people that are reading books, because when they say that, oh, I won't read this and I won't do that, that's not really being fair, because, you know, the thing is, they may enjoy the book. You know, if there's a couple swear words, or if there's swear words, it depends. As writers, we all know, some characters just swear, they do things, and it's not really what we do, it's what the character does. We're not the character, and it takes writers years to get over that fear of thinking, oh, are they going to think badly of me? But the truth is, when you write a character, if they swear, if they, whatever they do, they're doing it, not us.
I don't have that fear. I write like everybody I know is dead.
Oh, I like that. I remember when
I was a kid, the book that drove everybody crazy was The Catcher in the Rye, and because it had so much cussing in it and, you know, adult types of conversations and topics. And now the book, I mean, even like the Judy Blume books, when they came out, and, you know, we can't discuss girls' sexuality so openly, and now those books seem very quaint.
Yeah.
So
it just changes with time,
but what's going on is nothing new.
Right. I think that's very true, and I think that all the subjects that are touched are subjects that a lot of them should be touched on there, because, you know, it does make people feel not alone if they are a certain way, you know, and I think that everything should be out there, and you can make a decision if you want your kids to read it or not, because if you say don't read it, they might read it anyway. So I think, you know, everybody was a teenager that is on the show, and we all know. We tell our parents one thing, and we do another thing. I mean, that's just normal, I think, you know, and I think parents that now, they think they're close to their children talk to them, but not about everything, you know. It just doesn't work that way.
No.
You know,
right.
I have friends that, you know, they think that their kids tell them everything. That is not true. It doesn't work. Kids just have their own private thoughts or talk to their friends, and they do whatever they do, and they tell their parents a lot of different things, and that's probably part of growing up. You know, you just do things, and you say things. Hopefully you don't get yourself in a lot of trouble. That's basically what happens. Teens are teens. You know, and basically the stories may change, and they may be, you know, a little different now because we're talking about different subjects, but the fact is kids in high school go through all of these things. And it doesn't matter what year it is. It's just a change for kids. So I think that all these books, I think in the TV shows and Glee and all these shows have brought that out, because they show what kids are going through. Some parents don't have a clue. They should. I worked for a pediatrician for years, and I think people don't realize when you have a little kid, they're little problems. When you have an older kid, they have other issues. And I think now that they're being addressed in TV shows is a good thing, because sometimes parents don't talk to their kids about these things. They don't want
to. For a long time,
a lot of kids about a lot of things.
Yeah. Yeah, it happens. Yeah, that's parents. They say. But
so
I think
a lot of the parents
forget
what it's like to be kids.
Exactly. That's really true. I do believe that. I really do believe that. You know, I think that parents, you know, I think that they can help their children if they kind of remember some of the things that they did. And they weren't perfect. Nobody, you know, and that's the thing. Nobody's perfect. And you can't ask for perfection. You just hope your kid gets through their teenage years without too much problem. And they move on to being an adult. And then they can write like us and write about anything they think about. You know, and I think it's the fun of writing for all of us. I think, you know, that we can have this freedom to do this. I think a lot of writers are free spirits in some ways, hopefully. Does anybody
have and writers, I'm learning in general, are just some of the, they're busy, but they're some of the nicest, most helpful people, too, when it comes down to it.
Yeah.
They're not all horror writers or serial killers.
But,
yeah, I agree.
Yeah, well, that's on the side.
But, you know, I think that that's one of the things about, you know, for certainly for me having the show and meeting a lot of people that I have never would have never met before and learning from a lot of different people and from different cultures. And, you know, we're all from, you know, different cultures and different states and, you know, and people are different depending on where you live sometimes, you know, and it's good to know a lot of different people and interact and read their writing. And I love having them on the show because it's just different. And I think people should learn, you know, there are differences, but we can still have a lot in common. And I think that's what makes, you know, it's fun for me. But I like fun. I like to have a good time. I really don't want to, as we know, get too serious because, it, you know, life is serious enough. So that's why, you know, if we can write and people enjoy and it's entertainment, I think that's what we're all doing. We're entertaining for however long they're reading our work or seeing a movie. And that's, I think, Joe, you would probably agree that all the things you've done, you know, you may not like some of it, but there are people that love your work.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, I don't hate any of it because I think it made me the writer and to some extent the person I am. I'm very content. I've really enjoyed my career. I love being a writer. I love what I do. I mean, you know, sometimes it's difficult. You have days when it's tough, but mostly I have a regular schedule. I'm excited when my feet hit the floor in the morning, and I stay that way till I get through, and then I go on to other things. I mean, just like anything else, you have bad days, but. Yeah, I'm very, very content.
See, I think that's important. Now, Brian, I know when I first met you, you know, I heard you on another show. I mean, you've been through a lot of things with, you know, your writing, and, you know, you've carried on through it all. Do you want to just before, you know, the show probably ended in a few minutes, but do you want to say a little bit about that? Because that's, you know, about how your writing has changed and how much you've had to put into this.
Right. Well, it probably took me 15 years before I published my first work, and I wrote a few novels that got rejected by publishers, and I realized it was just one of the things you just got to stay persistent with, and just keep writing. I kept taking classes. I kept going to writing retreats. I joined some critique groups where I read my work out loud, and people would tell me basically how they experienced my writing, so I really got some good feedback, and then I just kept reading lots of books, and eventually I started selling my work, and now I'm able to have a career where I've got editors asking me for my next book, and I have an agent, and it's an exciting time now. And now it's just like, how can I get myself to write the next thing? You know, it's just really like Joe says, it's hitting your feet in the morning and getting to work and keep producing. Right. Producing the fiction so that you have something to sell, to lease in a few months or next year, and it's an exciting time.
And I think that, you know, I think that a lot of us have felt, you know, people have trauma in their lives and they've had tough times, but the thing is they've carried on through all this.
Yeah, that goes into the work.
Yeah.
Yep. Big time.
Yeah, and that's, and, you know, and as you grow as a writer and the longer you're in this, your work does get better because you've experienced more things, you know, and that does help. Unfortunately,
right.
We have to have some bad things in our life to make us better writers sometimes because we've been through things. You know, we're all here and we all know what each of us has had in our lives, and everybody's had problems, and that's the thing, to overcome anything that you can and just keep going. And, right, get your feet on the ground and move on. I think that's good advice, you know, for people that are out there. Just keep going. And, you know, the years go by, but you learn. Hopefully. Hopefully we all learn. And, I mean, I think we all did. You know, I think, you know, we all have been in different fields. We've done different things, but we've all enjoyed writing. And that's the good thing.
Yes.
You know, like Joe said, we're here because we love this. And I think that that's a good thing, that everybody here is really, like Elizabeth, I mean, you like all this, you know.
Oh,
you've been
I love
doing
it.
For years. Yeah, and I think
I do the same thing Joe does. I get up in the morning, the first thing I do is I sit down, make my coffee, and I just get to writing. It's a routine.
Yeah.
It's part of my normal way of living. And I always tell aspiring writers, don't wait until you're inspired, because you'll be waiting forever.
There's no such thing.
That's the worst thing. You have to plan.
Yeah, inspiration is like a muscle. The more you use it, the more capable it is, and the bigger it builds, mm-hmm. and the stronger it gets, and the more able you are to access it.
Right.
And just do it. You know, and if you don't like it, you'll redo it. Because we all do this. You know, you start writing.
Sometimes stuff you
think
you don't like is better than you think, and sometimes the stuff you think is wonderful is not so good. You just never know until it's the process.
That's right.
Right.
It's true. It really is. I know. And we're all, the thing is, the good thing is that we're all here. We all like it. And that's one of the things when people listen to this show, that everybody's gone through the first stages of writing. But the thing is, instead of saying, I hope it comes to me. It doesn't. It just, once you start writing, like I know for me, if I start writing, all of a sudden the story starts coming. If I start sitting here, I'm going, it's not going to work. But if I start writing, it just works.
Yeah, if you get stuck, write one good sentence, and it'll usually lead to two good sentences. Then before you know it, you're doing it. I mean, some days you just need to take off and watch a movie, read a book, take a walk, you know, whatever.
Right.
Be on a radio show, right, talk about things.
Yeah.
And right, you know, I mean, it's fun for all of us, and I think that's one of the things, that no matter how much we go through, we all have fun doing that. So I think we probably don't talk about that as much as we should, and I think you're right when you said that you have fun, you know, and you like this, and you love this, Joe, and that's, like, very good inspiration.
Yeah, aluminum chair factory. I used to work in aluminum chair factories, and I lived where I did farm work. I was a janitor for years. I sold the very first thing I ever wrote, and then I sold everything after that up to a point, and then I switched from nonfiction to fiction, and then I had two and a half years before I sold. And then by the time I was 29, I was full-time. But in that time, and from the time I was 15 until I was 29, I was doing every kind of job possible and writing part-time. And when people tell me they don't have time or they're raising a family, I don't have any sympathy for them, because I raised a family. My wife and I, we have very good, you know, great children, very close to us. And so, you know, you can do it. You know, you just have to balance things out. You got more time than you think. Because a lot of the time you're wasting, and you really don't get to spend a whole lot of it then when you're in the grave.
Yep.
Right.
That's right. Exactly. That's why we're all here, right? The truth is, that's right. You know, we all do this because you just keep going. And, you know, you can't really sit back and say, like, oh, I wish I would have done that. That's why I try a lot of things. And if it doesn't work, I don't care. I learned from it. You know, I don't want to be afraid not to try anything, because that's worse. I mean, you have to try different things, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but you do learn, I hope, from it. Yeah.
Well, that was something I learned from, when I sold my first book, which actually was about the fourth thing that was actually released. I sold it in 2008, I think, maybe late 2007. And people said to me, well, you wrote a book, when they heard I'd sold it. I said, well, no, I've written 10 or 11. This is just the first one I've sold.
Yeah.
I've been doing this a long time. This is just the first one that was worth a damn, I guess.
Yeah.
It's like that old saying,
that
it takes 3 years to prepare a good ad lib.
It just means they haven't found them yet. You know, sometimes it just doesn't work, and sometimes maybe a book that you've written will come, you know, you'll be able to publish it. You never know.
Right, but you're learning as you go. I mean, if the very first novel I ever wrote was out, oh my God, I'd be fighting so hard to pull that out of the public.
Yeah.
Determination overcomes opposition all the time.
It's really more about
determination than talent. I had a lot of talented people that started with me, and they just disappeared and quit. And that they were easily distracted by the, you know, slings and arrows of life. And of course, we all have to deal with them. But writing's one way you can deal with them.
I agree.
And writing has its ups and downs.
And when you get rejections from a publisher, just move on. Just keep going. Don't let that stop you.
It's all part of the game.
And I think we probably should get everybody's websites, because we didn't get that. And
Well, I'm going to tell you mine real quick. It's www.joerlansdale.com, and I'm going to have to run.
Thank you so much for being on. It was a pleasure meeting you.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Nice
talking to you, Joe.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Joe.
Bye-bye, Joe.
Now, that's inspiration. See, that's a good inspirational guy, that he came on and he's been there, done that, and so that's what people should listen to. I'm listening to this. I think, you just keep going. Okay, Trent, do you have a website? I know you do. Do you have a website?
Yes, I've got my website, www.trentzelazny.com. I won't spell it. Okay. And then I've got my Facebook page, Trent Zelazny, the writer in Ward 11, and I post
okay.
random crap
yeah.
on there.
Okay, well, that's right. Right. Well, we all do that. That's what it's getting to be half the time, you know.
Yep.
And, you know, but you know what, though? I forgot to say something. You know, like, we actually, you know, I've actually been on that Pinterest, and I was listening to a webinar yesterday, and it's actually a really interesting place to put books. And it's, I think this will be good because there's no real talking. It's kind of like Facebook without words, and it's very interesting. And a lot of people are on it now. They're putting their books on, and it gets pinned to other people. And I think actually this is what we all need, because what happens is those people that are on Pinterest, a lot of them, they're not writers. They're readers. So I think this
right.
is a big help for people, because they will be out there looking for books, and it gets pinned to different people, and there's people that we don't know who sees it. And it's just different people than on Facebook that are all right. There's a lot of writers on Facebook. They're not buying anybody's book. And Twitter, they're just, you know, tweeting all day long, which we talked about last time we've been on shows. All of us have been here. So I think that Pinterest is something that's not bad. You know, I think that might work for people. Okay, Brian, I know you have a website. And
yeah, my website is www.brian, with an I, B-R-I-A-N, Moreland, M-O-R-E-L-A-N.com. So just basically www.brianmoreland.com.
Christopher?
And then I'm also on Facebook and Twitter.
You are on Facebook. Well, you're on a lot, and you also have a blog. What did you say? You have a blog too, though. I know you do. Is it on your site? I think if you click it, it's on your site too, though.
Right, and if people go to my website, they can click onto my blogs.
Right.
I have a couple blogs.
Yeah, you have a lot of good information on your site. Christopher, you have a site?
I haven't visited my website in like a year. It's just easier at this point right now for people to follow me on Facebook or on Goodreads.
Okay.
I started writing blogs on Goodreads. It was easier to write them there than it was to do on my own page. So,
is that what you're doing?
Once I get, you know, I haven't wrote a blog in a while either, but once I get, you know, a bigger catalog of work and everything like that, then I'll go back and revamp it and all that stuff. Right now I'm just focusing on the writing and getting better and getting stuff out there.
That's a good thing.
Everything else will
come. That is a good thing. That is a good thing.
And I'm Elizabeth A. Black on Facebook and Twitter. And my website is elizabethablack.blogspot.com.
And I should say mine is www.michiganavenuemedia.com, but World of Ink, Virginia Grenier, my partner in this, and Virginia and I. Virginia has a wonderful website. She's put everything in that, which is www.worldofinknetwork.com. All our shows are there, all the things that we offer, and she's been doing some really good videos, short ones for people. Fran Lewis has one, and she's been really doing a great job. And this is, you know, I mean, these are all things that people need to do sometimes, but Virginia has a lot of information there for writers, and that's a good thing because, you know, we all need help in a lot of different, you know, everybody helps each other. So I think that that's one of the things that I like. And, you know, Sandra, is there anything that you'd like to say here? Sandra?
No, I'm good.
Oh. Okay, Sandra, I just want to say I'm not being rude to Sandra today and not talking. Sandra, did you have a reason why you're not, you know, talking today, right?
And I'm quitting smoking.
Okay, see, I don't want to bother. Right, see, that's it. I had to tell you that because this is a real, it's a very hard thing to do. So normally she would be asking questions, but I know how hard this is when you stop smoking. It's not easy. And so,
I quit a few years ago after smoking for 2 years. I quit cold turkey, so I know how bad it is.
Right, right.
It's a tough one.
Fortunately, I never got into smoking. But everybody in my family did. Most of them quit now. The only one that hasn't quit yet is my ex-wife, and I want to put a foot in her ass for it, but I can't. Stop smoking.
Trent, did you ever
smoke?
She's
listening. She's going to put a foot in my ass.
I am a smoker, actually.
You are? Okay. All right. So that's, you know, I mean, look, you know, it's tough to quit. It really is. So we wish you luck, and we'll hear on all these shows if you can keep this. It's very hard. It's not easy.
I support groups.
Well, my thing was, you know, my thing with smoking basically became, well, I developed so many other problems and disorders and whatnot, and I managed to get rid of all those. I said, well, for now, I'll just, I'll keep the smoking. My mom actually at one point, you know, was talking to me about quitting smoking, and I said, okay, well, I could go back to the liquor and the this and that. And she said, oh, no, you should smoke,
Right. You know, I mean, sometimes, you know, sometimes, it, look, you know, a lot of times cigarettes, they're like a friend. I mean, I always looked at it like a friend. And, you know, and it's very tough to give that up, you know. And so I give people credit when they do quit, because I never want to smoke again, because I never want to have to quit again, because it was the worst experience ever. You know, it's very hard. So Sandra, we all know how it is. So that's why I didn't talk to Sandra too much today. I just wasn't not talking to Sandra, but I know that she is, it is a tough day. I don't want to make it tougher, right? I don't want to do anything. All right, thank you all for being on. And, you know, and it was really fun. And, you know, as always, all of you are welcome anytime. If you want to have a, you know, any of your books come out and you want to come on, just let me know. And we like to have these shows because I want to show everybody how much fun this is and how normal we all are, no matter what we write.
We don't have
to do a website to be normal, and we don't have to do Facebook. In this crew that we have here, everybody goes their own way. And this is why I like these shows, is because there's no set way to be. So anybody out there thinking there's a set way, there isn't, you know, as we see on my shows. Because I say,
did our show end?
I don't know, did it?
Marcia, did we lose you?
Hi, I'm still here. This is Trish.
I guess so.
Uh-oh, cue music.
Yep, I think
we're
done.
Okay, well, talk to y'all later.
Hey, talk
to
y'all later.
Good talking to you guys.
Yeah. Thanks for having
everybody.
Thanks for being on.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.